right, Vice Chair Ginsburg, we are recording and broadcasting. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm Phil Ginsburg, the Vice Chair of the California State Parks and Recreation Commission, and I've been asked to chair today's meeting in the absence of our fabulous chair, Commissioner Rue Mapp, who is celebrating a life milestone, was unable to be with us today. I call to order the 2021 September 29th and 30th meeting of the California State Park and Recreation Commission. We'll start with a few announcements. Because of the COVID-19 emergency and the governor's executive orders N2920 and N3320, we're conducting this commission meeting virtually. The next meeting is scheduled for Friday, December 17th, 2021, and will also be held virtually. Members of the public can watch the meeting stream live online at www.cal-span.org. An archived video of this meeting will also be available on CalSpan for later viewing. The commission is using the video conferencing service Zoom to host the meeting and allow for public participation. Members of the public who wish to comment can do so using Zoom or by telephone, and should register for the Zoom meeting to receive a unique meeting ID and password. For technical support, please call 805-801-3576. Again, that's 805-801-3576. At approximately 12 p.m., depending upon where we are in the agenda, we will consider a 30-minute lunch break. If we are close enough towards the end, I'm going to ask the commissioners to weigh in on whether we should proceed or take a break. Now I'd like to ask the clerk of the board to take a roll call of the commissioners.
Thank you. Commissioner Danny Bakewell Sr. from Bradbury, California.
Present.
Commissioner Sarah Barth from Pleasanton, California.
Present.
Vice Chair Ginsburg, San Francisco.
Present.
Commissioner Asma Mahdi from Los Angeles.
Present.
Commissioner Rue Mapp from Vallejo. Okay, not present. Commissioner Catherine Toy from San Francisco.
Present.
Commissioner Diane Wittenberg from Pasadena. Oh, you're muted, Commissioner Wittenberg.
Sorry, present.
Thank you. Catherine Baxter, representing Senator Henry Stearns out of Canoga Park. Okay, not present. And Keith Cellino from Sacramento, representing Assemblymember Eduardo Garcia from Coachella.
Thank you. At this time, I'd now like to introduce the Natural Resources Agency and State Parks staff. Chief Deputy Director Liz McGurk, Deputy Director of Administrative Services Will Shasma, Deputy Director of Legislative Affairs Maribel Barajas, Chief Counsel Tara Lynch, Senior Counsel Catherine Tobias, Planning Chief Alex Stell, Deputy Chief of Law Enforcement and Emergency Services Scott Elliott, and our Director of the California State Parks and Recreation Department, Armando Quintero. Director Quintero, I know you'll share a director's report this morning on the agenda, but I'd welcome you to take a few moments to offer any opening remarks if you have some.
Well, good morning, Vice Chair, commissioners, park staff, and members of the public. I'm joining you today from Calaveras Big Trees State Park. So the picture, if I look out the window, is the reality of where I am. It's really an extraordinary time in so many ways. I think the confluence of the, honestly, the disasters that we've faced this last year have been not only extraordinary, but I think what we're seeing is phenomenal resilience on the part of the park staff and professionals. And it's something that I think we can all be very proud of. And I know that in the staff reports today, you'll be hearing some very promising news about state parks, and I very much look forward to today's meeting and tomorrow's meeting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Director Quintero. All right, moving on now to the agenda management portion of our meeting. If there is no objection to the agenda, it will be adopted as published. Do I hear any objections? Hearing none, we'll move on. So now for some instructions regarding public comment periods during the meeting. Public comments will be heard prior to commission discussion. The commissioners can ask questions of staff, but should refrain from having an in-depth discussion until the public makes their comments. There will be 7 public comments during this meeting. Today, we will have 1 combined public comment period following agenda items 4, 5, and 6, which are staff updates. We will have 1 public comment period following agenda item 8, which are commission subcommittee updates. 1 public comment period following agenda item 9, Memorial Grove resolutions. And agenda item 10, which is general public comment for items not on the agenda on either day of this meeting. Then tomorrow, we will have 1 public comment period following agenda item 13, which is the renaming of Patrick's Point State Park. 1 public comment period following agenda item 14, which is the general plan and final environmental impact report for the Auburn State Recreation Area. And then agenda item 15, general public comment for items not on the agenda on either day of the meeting. Each speaker will have 1 minute to present their public comments. At this time, I'd like to request the meeting clerk to read the detailed instructions for public participation for today's meeting.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm the clerk for the State Park and Recreation Commission meeting today and tomorrow, and will now provide some information about how public participation will be organized for the meeting taking place today and tomorrow. It is helpful for everyone participating in the meeting, commissioners and staff included, to introduce themselves before speaking. In this virtual setting, not everyone is participating using video. So again, please, everyone, remember to introduce yourself before speaking. If you wish to speak during a public comment period, you will do so 1 of 2 ways, using the teleconferencing service Zoom or by calling in by telephone. Each speaker must register individually and will receive a unique registration link. Multiple speakers are not permitted to pool their comments under 1 speaker. For registration instructions, see the website parks.ca.gov/commission or call 805-801-3576 for technical support. Again, that is 805-801-3576. Now for some details about how speakers will be handled during the public comment periods. First of all, our staff will mute all microphones during the meeting unless someone is speaking. If you want to speak during a specific agenda item's public comment period, you will use the raise hand feature in Zoom, or if by telephone, dial *9. This is like getting in line behind the microphone at an in-person meeting. If you do not raise your hand to speak, it is like not getting in line. We won't be able to call on you. When you register, you indicate which agenda item number you plan to speak, but this information is not available on our screen, so you must still raise your hand to be called on to speak. So how do you raise your hand? When the commission opens the public comment period for the agenda item for which you'd like to comment, and you are prepared with your comments, you will either dial *9 on your telephone or click the raise hand button in Zoom. This button is typically located at the bottom of the screen. You might have to hover over that area for it to display. And again, if you need technical support, call 805-801-3576. Okay, so now you have raised your hand. What next? When the public comment period starts, names of commenters will be called in the order displayed on our screen. If you have called in by telephone, only your number might be displayed, so we will call out the last four digits of the phone number. You will not be able to see the names or numbers in the queue. When your name or digits are called, your device will be unmuted. Please try to speak from a quiet location to avoid background noise. You will not appear on video. Each speaker will have 1 minute to speak. This can be extended by the vice chair. You will see a timer on the screen if using a device. Speakers on the telephone will be alerted at the 45-second mark and when their time is up. If you submitted materials to be displayed while you speak, we intend to have it ready when your name is called. But in case not, please request that it be displayed using the file name. When it is displayed, you will need to remember to request that it be advanced. For example, next slide, please. Okay, that's it. Remember, call 805-801-3576 if you need technical support. Thank you, everyone, for your participation.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Now moving on to agenda item 3, which is the director's report. We have Director Quintero present with us, and so feel free to begin when you're ready.
Good morning again, everyone. Thank you so much. Just a few updates. With regard to the re-examining our past initiatives effort, I'd like to just cover a couple of things. In terms of renaming efforts, staff held a stakeholder workshop on the 24th of this month to consider the renaming of Negro Bar. There's a lot of local support around the changing of the name, and the district continues to work with the local community on that effort and is going to be engaging a statewide effort to develop a more up-to-date history and historical context of this area and the significance both to the region as well as to the state. Tomorrow, as you are aware, there is a request that's going to be brought forward to the commission in the reconsideration or in the consideration of renaming Patrick's Point. And that will be covered in the meeting tomorrow. And Anderson Marsh is another area that we are looking at. And staff is preparing the research and documentation in order to present that issue at a future meeting. Park staff is also developing a process for vetting and addressing newly identified issues, topics, and subjects related to the re-examining our past initiative. We are assembling an advisory committee, which includes a network of academics, scholars, and other community stakeholders and subject matter experts to help advise us, as well as helping to formulate a continuing process for input and consideration. And we are working with history and social science programs, We are working with history and social science programs, professors, scholars, and students from various academic institutions and organizations with the goal of obtaining contemporary and comprehensive historic scholarship. We also looking at issues in terms of research, references, and source materials in order to aid the re-examining the past efforts, which include the potential renaming, recognition, and enhanced interpretation of the stories at California State Parks. The path forward effort in producing the strategic operation plan, it's currently being reviewed by executive staff, and we are working to include additional employee, stakeholder, and public engagement. It will help provide additional input that will be incorporated into the final version of that plan. An implementation team has been identified, and it consists of executive staff within the department. And this team is tasked with developing the implementation plan, which will identify, organize, and prioritize projects that address the goals and objectives outlined in the Path Forward program. The new California State Parks app was officially launched in June of 2021, and it was produced by the app developer Outer Spatial. It's really great, and I encourage folks to take a look at this app. It provides a continually updated online reference for visitors and for park users alike. I encourage any of you to take a look at the new app by Outer Spatial. We have developed, or we have announced, the California State Parks policy for e-bikes or electric bicycles, and we did that on August 27th. This policy addresses the passage of AB 1096, which declassified designated class 1, 2, and 3 bikes as motorized bicycles and authorizes a local authority or governing body to regulate e-bike use. With the increasing usage of e-bikes as a form of recreation and commuting, State Parks is working to manage their growing presence within the California State Park system. We seek to accommodate e-bike users and increase the opportunities for this form of recreation, but we also are taking into account safety concerns and the preservation of cultural and natural resources. The policy dictates department-wide guidance on the class of e-bikes allowed within the state park system and provides for each district to develop and designate the appropriate e-bike use locations within the local park and policy parameters. This policy is designed to keep consistency with our existing public resource codes and departmental policies. And we are allowing for the decision authority to be made by the local superintendent relative to the concerns or issues being addressed at the local parks. Excuse me, my notes. You know, I think I'm going to stop right there. Those are the two big issues. But I will say, as I said in my initial comments, I'm really looking forward to the staff reports today. We have some very exciting news on behalf of parks and some great announcements that you'll all be hearing today. Thank you so much to all of you.
Thank you, Director Quintero. Any questions from commissioners before we move on to agenda items 4 through 6, staff updates? And I am not seeing, I see Commissioner Barth.
Yeah, first of all, thank you, Director Quintero, for coming out to see the parks in the Central Coast region. It's really great that you're able to go see these places in person. And secondly, on the renaming and re-examining our past initiative, it would be really helpful to get some sort of a timeline for when you think sort of the broader policies and practices that your implementation team is putting together. I get a lot of questions about this process and what's happening, and especially as we move forward with some of these individual units, I think being able to articulate to the public how the broader effort is moving forward would be really helpful. So that would be great as you all develop it.
Thank you, Commissioner Barth. We do have a site or a page on the Parks website, and we will continually update that, and we'll be sure to send a notification out to all of the commissioners when we have updated information and dates for that effort. It's really, obviously it's there's high public interest in that, and we wanna make sure we're as clear as possible with everyone in terms of what we're doing. And, you know, really, I think for me, the ultimate goal in that effort is to tell the full story of parks. This is really representing our histories, not only in contemporary, in terms of contemporary issues, but really how do we take a look at the past, literally going back many, many generations in California, and how do we respectfully represent those histories? And that's really our goal. But we will send you, send the commissioners an update as soon as we have any changes or specific dates there. Thank you.
Commissioner Wittenberg. You're on mute.
So I was going to ask something similar. Am I still on mute?
Nope.
We can hear you. Nope.
Oh, you're back on mute. You were fine there for a second. You have to flip off again. You're on mute still. Now okay. You're good.
Thanks. Sorry. So I was going to ask something similar to what Commissioner Barth asked. We do, as a commission, have a some guidance that we wrote ourselves on naming, which is totally useless and very old. And I thought that we as a commission should at least have some discussion about our thoughts on that at some future meeting, or maybe there should be a subcommittee, or maybe we should be part of, because we don't want to adopt something that is antithetical to something similar the staff is developing. But I would like to see something evolve into actually a commission position, so we have some baseline from which to go when we have especially difficult choices on naming.
Thank you, Commissioner. And thank you, Commissioner. And you're right. I misspoke. We really need to be bringing these proposals to you for review and for your comments and inclusion. And it's Alex that probably needs to weigh in on this.
But I think this is Commissioner Bakewell. But I think she's asking even a larger question, Armando, and that is that there should be some interaction with the commission or subcommittee that could review and have some input before the staff actually brings what they're deciding, if you will, to the commission.
I understand, Commissioner Bakewell, and that's what I meant to say, is that we will bring it to you as a recommendation for the commission to review and edit and change and weigh in on what the final guidance would be.
Alex, before you weigh in, just later in the agenda today, actually under commission business, we're actually going to be talking about what committees and subcommittees that this commission is interested in either continuing or creating. And Commissioner Wittenberg's idea is a very good one. Obviously, our naming issues are really important and substantive right now. And perhaps that is a great channel for commissioner mm-hmm. involvement and for engagement between the commission and staff on first and foremost, naming policies. And then, of course, with policies in place, then staff does its work and then brings back recommendations to the commission. So maybe, unless Alex, you have something additional to offer here, that we hold this one till we get to that agenda item. But it is a very good idea, Commissioner Wittenberg.
Definitely. I think the only thing I would mention is while we're doing this process, we will be looking at the statement of policies for the commission, and we would expect that the commission weighs in as we look at those statements for renaming and classification and how we might need to revise those or freshen them up.
Great, thank you. Any other commissioner questions or comments related to the director's report? Okay, seeing none, why don't we move on to agenda items 4 through 6, which are staff updates. And then following staff updates, we'll move to public comment. So why don't we start with welcoming Will Shasma, the Deputy Director of Administrative Services, to present agenda item 4, which is the budget report.
Thank you for the introduction, Commissioner Ginsburg, and good morning, Vice Commissioner and Commissioners. Pleasure to be here today to present on what I think is a very healthy budget for state parks. We've seen some great budgets over the last few years, and this one is definitely no exception. There should be a staff report available through our website if you're looking to get any of this information in writing in addition to the report I give today. So this is a budget report for our 21-22 enacted state parks budget. If you're interested in what the individual budget bills are, they are AB 128, SB 129, SB 170, and SB 155. These were SB 170 and SB 155 were recently signed by the governor and are now enacted. So it was definitely a different budget process this year. Typically, we would have all budget bills enacted by July 1. However, this year, there were some late additions through the budget process that carried over into the budget year. So it's a little bit different of a process this year. However, all monies are now appropriated and available for expenditure as of today. So a little bit of background. We've talked a lot about access in this commission, and I think this budget definitely reflects the governor's values and the state's values in terms of state parks access. As we know, 6 of every 10 Californians live in park poor neighborhoods, and 4 of every 10 Californians have no access to open space. So this budget includes initiatives to enable safe, equitable, enjoyable access to state parks and open spaces for all Californians. These investments expand environmental education, enhance safe, reliable access to state and local parks, enhance and restore state parks through restoration and climate resilience effort, and increase recreation opportunities for Californians at a time in which many have relied on state parks to provide relief from the pressures that COVID-19 has placed on Californians' daily lives. And I think, you know, special emphasis this year on climate resilience, specifically with regard to our state park forests. There was a May revise presentation that was given to State Park and Recreation Commission, in which we did detail that proposal. I'll go over that again briefly in today's report. So just at a glance, the total budget for state parks in 21-22 is $1.76 billion, which is, you know, reflects an ever-growing budget for state parks. You know, the asterisk there is that a lot of that, or a portion of that, is reflective of member requests in this year's budget. But I think, you know, over the last 5 years, 6 years, we've seen this budget grow to over $1 billion. I think starting in 1920 was the first year we had cracked $1 billion. So, you know, the budget is definitely expanding, which I think is a good thing for state parks, as we can all agree. Further breaking down that $1.7 billion number, state operations, which is essentially our normal operations for state parks, that's our visitor services, that's our headquarter functions, that's our policy functions, that's our, you know, boots on the ground, essentially. The dollar portion for those operations is $1.2 billion. In this year's budget, the major components of the state operations increases are outdoor access for all, fire repairs, fire prevention, sea level rise, and deferred maintenance. Local assistance, these are our grant programs, $372.4 million. In this year's budget, the major increases are seen in our outdoor equity grants program, our statewide park program. And then, as I mentioned, we have the various legislative member requests, which will be applied through our grant making units. And then capital outlay, that's the third component of our overall budget, $136 million. The major piece in the increase there would be our $95.3 million for the California Indian Heritage Center, which is not necessarily a new project for us, but the project money was taken out of the budget in 2021 due to the recession, due to COVID, economic downturn, concerns. But the money is restored in this year's budget. And then another 41.4 for various projects. So just kind of going over some of the big proposals in this year's budgets, which have been covered, I think, in previous commission meetings. So I will try to be brief here. For outdoor access for all, first element we have is our California State Park Adventures Program. This is $5.6 million general fund for a pilot program to implement the California State Park Adventure Pass. This pass will waive day use entries for fourth graders and their families at participating state parks to encourage these students to get outdoors and explore the cultural and natural resources of California. Next, we have our California State Library Partnership Pilot Program. The budget includes $3 million general fund to collaborate with the California State Library to provide state park passes for checkout at libraries. This 3-year pilot program could either be statewide or target specific areas. We're still working on some implementation aspects of this proposal. And it's based on a successful pilot in Marin County. Marin County's program provides passes for checkout in all county libraries and selects city libraries in lower income neighborhoods. We also have our Golden Bear Pass program. The budget includes $500,000 general fund to reimburse California Department of Social Services and for their efforts to notify CalWORK recipients of their eligibility for the Golden Bear program, Golden Bear Pass, that is. This pass provides free day use access to most state parks on an annual basis. The goal of this pilot is to increase awareness for the pass. Moving on, we have our Outdoor Equity Grants Program. This is another $40 million for our successful Outdoor Equity Grants Program. This program increases the ability of residents in low-income urban and rural communities to participate in outdoor experiences at state parks and other public lands. Funding builds upon $20 million for this program in the 2020 Budget Act and will allow the program to incorporate the findings and experiences of the effectiveness of the previous program to connect low-income communities with the outdoors. We have $3.1 million environmental license plate fund, which will allow the department to implement some K-12 access expansion. This will expand projects and opportunities for the Parks Online Resources for Teachers and Students program, better known as PORTS, our summer learning program, our marine and protected area programs, and we'll expand these into underserved population areas. These programs and projects will break down access barriers for disadvantaged communities by dedicating full-time staff to build a suite of year-round educational access opportunities and foster partnerships. $155 million for our statewide park program. This program funds local assistance grants to create new parks and improve existing parks in the state's most disadvantaged communities. The department currently holds $2.4 billion in requests for the $426 million that was available through Prop 68. And then we have our community engagement, relevancy, and history program, which was started several years ago in a pilot phase. This is $585,000 State Park and Recreation Fund to institutionalize the community outreach program and California Relevancy and History Interpretation Program. So this money would continue these programs in perpetuity. Previously, they were funded out of our State Park Protection Fund. So this funding ensures that these programs will continue. So that's it for the access proposals in this budget. Moving on to our fire and climate resiliency proposals included in this year's budget. We have $15 million general fund for redwood forest restoration, watershed health, and fuels treatment in the Redwood National and State Parks. This will help our Redwoods Rising projects that we've been working on over the past several years. We have $90 million general fund for forest health, fire prevention, fuel reduction, vegetation management, and environmental review across the system. And then $2 million general fund to comply with the requirements of AB 3074, which expanded wildfire defensible space and ember resistant zones. As far as fire repair, $10 million general fund and $24 million in FEMA reimbursement authority to address repairs related to the Woolsey fire. And then another $113.5 million general fund and $103.5 in FEMA reimbursements for the final design and construction to replace and repair facilities and trails destroyed by various fires in 2020. The bulk of that funding will be designated for Big Basin. And then for climate resiliency, we have $11.5 million general fund to implement projects to reduce the risks of fire, flood, inundation, and sea level rise. Deferred maintenance, another nice general fund amount for state parks, one-time money, $185 million in this year's budget, which is an increase of $20 million over the May revise proposal. As many of you know, our backlog is over $1 billion. Deferred maintenance continues to be one of the biggest challenges facing this department, primarily due to funding and resources. This money will help us out considerably in making a dent in our deferred maintenance backlog. Some of the highlight projects that we plan on committing to with this $185 million would include the Pigeon Point Lighthouse Rehabilitation, Crystal Cove Cottages, Borderfield Entrance Road, the Emmanuel Church Stabilization and Preservation, and Hurst Road Stabilization and Rehabilitation. And then finally, just a couple other notable increases included in this budget. We have $30 million for the rehabilitation of the Sacramento Rail Yards. This funding would be available for support, local assistance, or capital outlay. And then $154.2 million general fund for urban river waterway projects. This funding is available to expand the department's presence, facilities, partnerships, and acquisitions in urban areas with a connection to rivers, waterways, and water systems. The money is available for state operations, local assistance, or cap outlay. The department will go through a deliberative process to determine how to allocate those resources among those three different components of budgeting. And then finally, $175.7 million general fund is included in control sections 19.56 and 19.57 of SB 170 for various member requests. Specific to state parks, there's $1.5 million that we will partner with the Natural Resources Agency to expand their oceanography program. $9.4 million to state parks, including $1.5 million for Mount Diablo State Park to improve bicycle safety and vehicle safety, $4.5 million for the Point Sur State Historic Park, completion of bridges 4 and 5 and improvements to the Point Sur Lighthouse, $1.4 million for the John Marsh Ranch House for preservation and reconstruction of the historic John Marsh Ranch House at Marsh Creek State Park in the county of Contra Costa, and $2 million for deferred maintenance at Topanga State Park and Will Rogers State Historic Park. And then finally, there's no proposed action on this report. It is intended for informational purposes only. So end of report. I'm happy to answer any questions on the budget report.
Thanks, Will. Any questions from commissioners? Commissioner Toy. You're on mute. Most important job of the acting chair seems to be to manage the mute button.
You're doing well, Commissioner Ginsburg. I really appreciate the report on the budget and am tremendously excited to see all the extra dollars there to help state parks out. In particular, I'm excited about the additional funds for access and equity in parks. And I'm curious if there's some mechanism that Parks has in place, some kind of metrics or whatnot, to be able to track whether these dollars are making headway against the figures that you quoted at the beginning, which were 6 out of 10 without, you know, live in park poor neighborhoods and 4 out of 10 Californians without access to open space within 15 minutes walk from their house. So we have some kind of metric to be able to track whether these dollars are actually making progress toward knocking down those numbers.
I think that's an excellent question. It's something we are definitely interested in being able to ascertain at state parks. You know, one, just being able to, you know, determine the effectiveness of tax dollars is always going to be critical for state parks. So typically whenever we embark on some type of BCP project that gets funded through the budget, there is some outcomes and accountability that we want to be able to deliver back to the legislature when we go back and either ask for extended funding or come back for another proposal that's related. We want to certainly be able to speak to the effectiveness of these programs. I think, you know, to your question of, you know, the effect on visitation, I think is the heart of what that question gets to. Are we reaching the people with these projects that we need to reach? Are we attracting new visitor demographics into state parks? And are we reaching the folks that we're intending to? You know, that's a data question, and it's one I think, you know, frankly, we've studied, struggled with for some time due to, you know, a variety of factors, but it's one that, you know, I think technology can really help us get there. I think, you know, there's a district superintendent's meeting going on this weekend or this week, and that was one of the big conversation topics. I see Armando has his hand up, so I think I will hand off to him, but To sum up my response to your question, it's in process. We will be working on those metrics and putting those in place. It's something that we're concerned with, but I will hand off to Armando to respond.
I'll just add, thank you, Will. And I'll just add to what Will said. Our deputy director for IT is at the meeting that I'm at, and this is exactly what we were talking about yesterday. And that is putting the metrics together so that we can report out on the very questions that you're asking, Catherine. Who's here? Are the programs effective? Are we reaching our target audiences? and what can we improve? And so we will be, I hope, at our next meeting reporting out on the approaches that we're going to be taking along those lines.
I would just note, Director Quintero, that there, and as I'm sure you guys are discussing at this meeting, there is technology now that does not just allows you to count, but to actually sort of look at, you know, sort of origin data, which is where people are coming from, which can be very useful in assessing, you know, basically the return on investment to make sure that we actually are improving access to a variety of state parks. So I know we've been doing a little bit of that work locally in San Francisco. And I'm sure the Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy and the Golden Gate National Recreation Area are also pretty familiar with that too. So anyway, that provides an exciting opportunity. Other questions, Commissioner Wittenberg?
I just wondered if it's my sense as a Southern Californian that this is a bigger problem in Southern California than Northern California's access and number of parks. And I just wanted to find out if that's true or a rumor I made up.
I think Liz has her hand up. I think she can contribute to the answer here.
Thank you, Director, and thank you, Commissioners. And Liz McGurk, Chief Deputy Director with State Parks. I think that is, to your question, Commissioner Wittenberg, I think that's a larger question. I'm probably not prepared to answer today, but I think it's something that collectively as an agency, you know, we're working on identifying where those barriers are and you know, how we can target programs to meet the needs of the communities where our parks are. I did want to circle back on the data question and just add to the discussion that, of course, the metrics and the evaluation and the data are very, very important to us. And we were very thoughtful as we're developing these programs to ensure that we are able to collect that data to understand who is using these passes. Would they have come to the park had this pass program not been there? You know, where are they coming from? So we have designed these passes with things like codes, you know, scannable codes so that we can sort of see where people are going in the park system. We're using QR codes so that people can take surveys. We'll be following up with users via email and with surveys in order to collect as much information as we can. And as we go on, these are 3-year pilots for the most part, but as we go on, we're going to get better at that and we're going to adjust. So I just wanted to let the commission know that this is something that we are thinking about is at the forefront of what we're doing with these programs to make sure that we are able to collect the information, answer some questions, and see what questions also need to be answered from this. So thank you.
Great. Other questions, commissioners, for Will? Okay.
I had a question.
Sure.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Oh, sorry, Sarah, I missed you. Sorry about that.
That's okay. We're like Hollywood Squares. It's hard to see everybody. There is so much to love in this budget. I'm really just delighted for state parks and for the public. One thing I wanted to just probe a little with you on, Will, and for any of your colleagues, you didn't mention it explicitly, but I know because I'm focused on these things, which is I think the budget did include some money for acquisition to enhance and expand some parks and or even contemplate creating a new park, which, you know, access, I think, is in part about thinking about where parks need to be so people can get to them. So anyway, I just wondered, I was delighted to see some money set aside for that. That looks to me like a direction that parks is heading into once again. And I just wondered if you or others could comment on the thinking behind that. And sort of the intent in seeing that kind of acquisition money included, even if it's a relatively modest amount.
Thank you, Commissioner. You know, I don't have that information in front of me in my budget report today. Is it okay if I get back to you with what we have specifically for acquisitions in this budget?
Yes, I'm less worried about the specific amounts because I think I already have that information. I'm really interested in the intent and the thinking behind it and where you see parks going with that or if there is any thinking and intent behind it or if it was just a one-off.
Sure. I think, you know, it's part of the overall access portfolio in terms of increasing access. If we can, you know, make some smart in-holding acquisitions or expand parks, you know, that on the natural, just from a, you know, geography perspective, is going to help increase access to these state parks. But I think, you know, just expanding the overall portfolio for state parks is, you know, no regrets in some situations when we have a no-cost acquisition, or they call them no-cost, you know, where we can take on a piece of land and, you know, add that to our overall footprint. We'll try to do that. But yeah, I think, you know, just in general, it's part of the overall kind of access intent there.
I had heard some murmurings that the governor was contemplating creation of some new parks. Is that something that Director Quintero or others could comment on?
Director Quintero.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for that question, Director or Commissioner Barth. Yes, we do have a combination of things. We have a prioritized list of parcels and areas that we would add to the state parks in terms of parcels adjacent to existing state parks, as well as targets for acquisition. This budget does include some specific funds in terms of things like creating a new OHV park, for example. We have funding for that. But one of the very exciting elements in this budget, I think, is something called the a program that puts over $150 million toward developing an urban rivers effort for state parks, where we can look at creating opportunities for parks and recreation closer to the populations near urban rivers. And I think that that's going to be a very exciting process. We're working internally right now to prepare sort of a position paper on that. But you are right. This governor and the Secretary of Resources and certainly parks leadership, we are all interested in increasing park areas, which we may be doing in partnership with other agencies, and also expanding existing parks. We certainly have seen in this pandemic that the public is hungry for places to get out to, and we really do need to provide those services. So we're anxious to deliver there. And we're working, and having this budget just get revealed to us and formally signed puts us now in a position of really getting to work and identifying what we'll be able to do. So thank you very much for that question.
Yeah, and just to bookmark, and maybe this comes up when we as a commission discuss subcommittees or committees, but I wonder if there's a role for the commission to play in helping to think about where parks are needed into the future, or if parks already has that vision, then to review and comment on it. But my understanding is that we have a role in developing sort of an annual recreation plan that seems like it might be an interface for this, and helping support parks and think about what they're aspiring to, where they want there to be parks in the future, longer term, maybe a constructive role that we could support. So we can take that offline, but I just want to encourage that kind of longer term vision and bigger picture thinking. Not that parks doesn't think big picture, but that maybe this commission can play a supportive role in that.
Thank you, Commissioner Barth. Okay. Seeing no other questions of Deputy Director Schaffsma or Director Quintero, why don't we move on to the next item, which is agenda item 5, which is going to be presented by Maribel Barajas, the Deputy Director of Legislative Affairs, and she's going to present our legislation update.
Good morning, Mr. Vice Chair and Commissioners. Can you all hear me?
Good. We can.
Okay, great. Maribel Barajas, Deputy Director of Legislative Affairs for State Parks. This report provides a summary and status of bills that affect California state parks. Information contained in this report is as accurate as September 14, 2021. Changes in the status may have occurred between this report, when this report was prepared, and this commission meeting. The first bill is SB 1. It's the Coastal Resources Sea Level Rise. This bill would establish the California Sea Level Rise Mitigation Adaptation Act of 2021 to create new planning, assessment, funding, and mitigation tools to address and respond to sea level rise. This bill would require state agencies to identify, assess, and to the extent feasible, avoid, minimize, and mitigate the impacts of sea level rise. It does many other things, but I'll just keep short on the summaries. This bill was signed by the governor. SB 2, it relates to peace officers, certification, civil rights. This bill would expand the authority to the Commission of Peace Officer Standards and Training, also known as POST, to include a decertification process. This bill would establish a Peace Officer Standards and Accountability Division within POST, with primary responsibilities for reviewing peace officer investigations and making recommendations for certificate suspension or revocation as specified. This bill was enrolled and presented to the governor on September 13. Senate Bill 63, this is fire prevention, fire hazard severity zone forest management. This bill would modify defensible space requirements in very high fire hazard severity zones, relaxing provisions authorizing few modification projects on adjacent properties. This bill was actually signed by the governor yesterday. Next bill is Senate Bill 266, relating to Chino Hill State Park expansion. This bill would require the department to provide all necessary assistance to acquire three specified properties adjacent to Chino Hills State Park and to manage those parcels as part of Chino Hills State Park. This bill was enrolled and presented to the governor on September 9th. SB 456 is a fire prevention, wildfire, and forest resilient action plan reports. This bill would rename and codify the Wildfire and Forest Resilience Task Force and would require the task force on January 1st, 2022 with the Natural Resources Agency, Cal EPA, the Office of Planning and Research, Cal Fire, and lead federal, state, local, and tribal agencies to develop a comprehensive implementation strategy for the Wildfire and Forest Resilience Action Plan issued by the task force January 2021, and to increase the pace and scale of wildfire forest resilient activities as specified. This bill was also signed by the governor. Next bill is SB 796. This is related to the County of Los Angeles, Manhattan State Beach deed restrictions. This bill requires the director of California State Parks by December 31st, 2021, to execute a deed amendment to exclude Bruce's Beach, a portion of Manhattan State Beach, from restrictions which require the property to be used for public recreation purposes in perpetuity. This bill was ordered to engrossing and enrolling on September 9th. AB Assembly Bill 9, is related to fire safety and prevention, Office of the State Fire Marshal, Community Wildfire Preparedness and Mitigation. This bill would codify the Regional Forest and Fire Capacity Program, an existing program administered by the Department of Conservation and a product of the Executive Order N0519 in California Climate Investments to provide grant funding to support projects in areas of the state that contain or are adjacent to very high fire hazard severity zones to enhance California's forest health and fire resiliency as specified. This bill would also transfer several Cal Fire duties and responsibilities to the state fire marshal. This bill was signed by the governor. AB 89 is related to peace officers' minimum qualifications. This bill would establish the Peace Officers Education and Age Condition for Employment Act, or PEACE Act, and would beginning December 31st, 2021, increase the minimum qualifying age for peace officers from 18 to 21. This bill was ordered to engrossing and enrolling on September 10th. AB 361 is related to open meetings, state and local agencies, teleconferences. This bill would extend temporary exemption to the Bagley-Keene Act granted by the governor in Executive Order N-2920, allowing state bodies to meet remotely until January 31st, 2022. This bill was signed by the governor. AB 1183 is relating to the California Desert Conservation Program. This bill would establish the California Desert Conservation Program to be administered by the Wildlife Conservation Board to provide for coordinated and strategic investments in the California desert region and to protect, preserve, restore desert region natural and cultural resources. This bill was enrolled and presented to the governor on September 13th. AB 1476 is related to the city of Modesto, Brook Park. This bill would authorize until June 30th, 2023, the city of Modesto to dispose of an existing Beard Brook Park property, acquire replacement park property of equal or of greater value to be used for park purposes in perpetuity and require compliance with all statutory programmatic requirements. This bill was ordered to engrossing and enrolling on September 9th. And last but not least, AB 472, this was related to campsite reservations. This bill would make it unlawful for a person to intentionally use or sell software or services to avoid a security controlled or measured use to ensure an equitable campsite reservation making process for visitors. This bill was enrolled and presented to the governor on September 10th. This completes the legislative report and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Deputy Director Barajas. This is a good time to acknowledge and welcome Catherine Baxter to the meeting, who's representing Senator Stern. Catherine, congratulations to you and Senator Stern on the passage of SB 63. So with that, let me see if there are any questions or comments on the legislative report, including anything that Catherine Baxter might want to say.
Sorry, my cat's here. I have no comments. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jimmy.
Thank you. Okay. Well, again, thank you, Deputy Director Barajas. We appreciate the report. There's a lot of legislative activity on the Hill relating to parks and fire prevention and all kinds of important topics. All right. Well, with that, I think we'll move on to agenda item 6, the park operations report. It's about 10 o'clock. My recommendation is that we proceed through this in public comment and then take a short break and then come back and do agenda item 7, which is commission business and then some of the resolutions before we wrap up the day. Does that make sense to everyone or are people craving a break right now? Okay, so let's move on then to agenda item 6, the park operations report, which is primarily focused on the 2021 wildfire season. And we have Scott Elliott, who's the Deputy Chief of Law Enforcement and Emergency Services, ready to join us.
Good morning, Vice Chair Ginsburg and Commissioners. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just have a short presentation and thank you for that introduction. Just a chance to talk again about our fire season, even though it is still in progress. We gave a presentation very similar to this at this time last year. And unfortunately, it's a bit of a recurring theme. But I think I'll start too by saying I'm a little self-conscious about my lack of a good background here, but I am also in a state park today and I'm at Donner Memorial up in the Sierra. And I just thought I'd take this chance to remind everyone that next month will be the 175th anniversary of the Donners being stuck on this side of the Sierra. It was at the end of October that the party reached Donner Lake. So little interpretive plug there for Donner. So moving on to wildland fires, if we could have the next slide, please. I actually showed this exact slide last year, and I just think the historic context is always important to kind of keep reminding ourselves of where we are on the arc of history with wildland fires. Fires have always been certainly a part of the ecological landscape in California, but over the last several years, we've become familiar with terms like megafires. And as we've sort of hit that point where we've got the confluence of factors, whether it's the suppression of all fires for the last 100 years, or it's the effects of climate change, or it's the increased development out into the wildland interface, all those factors coming together. In 2016, we had the Soberanes fire that affected several of our parks in Big Sur. At the time, that had the moniker of being the most expensive firefight in California history. That has been since surpassed several times. And then in 2017, we had the very destructive fires in the Sonoma-Napa area. The Thomas fire down in 2017, which led to the mudslides, the Carr Delta and Mendocino complex fires up in our Northern Buttes district in 2018, some of those in the Redding area, then the Woolsey fire, which was mentioned earlier in 2018 down in the Angeles district, the Camp fire, of course, in 2018 that was so severely impactful to the community of Paradise. And now, next slide, please. We came to 2020, which again, we recapped last year, but an incredibly destructive year across the state and state parks. We had 22 of our park units impacted. And of course, the severe impacts to places like Big Basin, which have now been well documented. And again, a year that saw five of the 20 largest fires in recorded history. So now we move on to 2021, if I could have the next slide. And at least at this point, it's a chance to take a deep breath, and at least from sort of the 30,000 foot view, a less impactful year than last year directly to state parks. Still a very significant fire year. I was just at portions of the Dixie fire over the weekend, and the destruction is without really my ability to give a superlative to it at this point. And so but specific to California state parks for 2021, we had several fires that resulted in the emergency evacuation of some of our collections. So the Monument fire was burning just west of the Weaverville Joss House, and the community of Weaverville in that historic park had to see its collections evacuated this summer. The collections were evacuated from Indian Grinding Rock in the early phases of the Caldor fire, not knowing which way that was going to move in some of the early times there. Empire Mine State Historic Park was evacuated during the river fire. that fire, thankfully, was stopped short of Grass Valley and Nevada City, but still, again, resulted in that evacuation. What's not on this slide is that we also evacuated the collections from Vikingsholm and from the Pine Lodge at Sugar Pine Point as the Caldor fire continued to advance into the Tahoe Basin. So thankfully, none of those collections were damaged. None of those places fire actually reached, but certainly decisions were made. And we'll talk about this in a later slide about how we're sort of evaluating the evacuation of collections and visitors and park resources in a later slide. But we have only, I say only, we've had 4,200 plus or minus acres burned in state parks this year. That's a fraction of what we saw last year. But of the fires, of the parks that had significant acreage burned, it was Grover Hot Springs, where we lost our parks maintenance shop and some park housing, and lost some acreage around, if you're familiar with that unit, went all the way around the pool complex, all the way around the campground. So we lost some acreage there at Grover Hot Springs. Shouldn't say lost, we saw it burned. Topanga from the, I believe it was called the Palisades fire. Hungry Valley actually saw two different fires in it this year. The Tumbleweed fire caused the most acreage to burn. And Auburn State Recreation Area, which was fairly recent from the Bridge Fire. The one that's not on that list, we actually had about 1,000 acres burn at Anza Borrego Desert as well. So about 10 parks impacted in total this year from fire directly, compared to 22 at this point last year. But a significantly less amount of acreage. If I could have the next slide, please. So what I want to take you to now is one of the tools that we're using during this sort of unprecedented era we're in wildland fire management and parks. And we have a department SharePoint site, and members of the department operations center, and those are taken from various disciplines and core programs across the department, representing whether it's cultural resources, natural resources, public safety, administration, facilities, are all part of this team that come together during emergency periods. And this is, again, the kind of the front page they'd come to. And if I could have the next slide, you can click then in as a member of this team to real-time mapping, or as real-time as it can get. And this is obviously the map of the state of California. You can see the department logo where there's an individual park unit. And then you can see the fires that have ignited across the state of various sizes on this map. Obviously a very crowded map. This is a screenshot from a couple of weeks ago, so this isn't necessarily real time what we're seeing right here. But you can then move in a little closer. So if I could have the next slide, and this is again another screen grab from that. And this shows the decision tree on the wildland fires. That this is the Caldor fire specifically. You can actually see the Tamarack fire then lower right on that screen that burned around Grover Hot Springs State Park. But the Caldor fire, you can see its advance on the Tahoe Basin. And there's those rings that are then created out from the red burn portion. I believe the first ring represents 2 miles from the fire line. The next ring would be 5 miles. That lighter blue moves us out 10 miles, and then it's out 20 miles in the purple. And in conversations at the State Operations Center with CAL FIRE, we're using those as well as certainly their advanced tools on fire modeling to determine where our risk would be for certainly visitors and staff, and then evacuating park resources, cultural resources, et cetera. And it was very precautionary, but still the decision was made based off these maps to look at places like Vikingsholm and Pine Lodge, which ended up at one point in the mandatory evacuation zone for a period of a few days, to go ahead and get the collections out while we had the time to do that safely with respect to the artifacts that we were removing, and certainly to staff safety that we're removing those. So just a new tool that we've been working with this year. I want to use this opportunity to really thank internally our GIS, that's Geographic Information System folks, and our IT staff who've done an amazing job putting all this together. And we simply ask for something, say, hey, gee, it would be nice to have X on a map. And they seem to take that as a welcome challenge. And the next thing we know is, in some cases, just within a few hours, we've got that up and in a way we didn't know was possible before. So a big thank you to them. If I could have the next slide, please. Again, just another look, and this is really another one of those moments where IT and GIS folks came in and helped us out. This overlays a lot of different information, just shows the power of GIS in making these decisions. This is showing everything from CHP incidents to road closures to where counties have designated mandatory or voluntary evacuation warning zones, not voluntary. And so it overlays a number of those things. Again, another good tool for making these decisions. That's also looking at the South Shore of Lake Tahoe, principally the Caldor fire in this particular screen grab. And next slide, please. And then we have a dashboard. And again, this is actually dated information right now. So don't pay attention necessarily to all the numbers on here, but this shows us at any given moment what parks we have in closure, either hard or soft. Soft meaning where we might close a parking lot, but still allow folks to walk in from an area, whereas a hard closure would be an emergency where we're not able to allow folks into the unit, visitors into the unit. So this is just showing the kinds of data we have at any given moment to look at to show the acres burned by district. We can go by park and look at those from there. I think there might be one more slide, or that might have been where we closed it, if I could have the next slide.
That is the final slide.
That is the final slide. Okay. The other screen that we can grab off this that we didn't have in this presentation is just where it goes into a little more detail on each park that's been burned and shows the acreage burned. Again, huge thanks to GIS folks for being able to map that out for us in as real time as it can get. So that's just an update on where we are with wildland fires for 2021 for state parks. And thank you for allowing me to present this morning.
Great. Thank you, Scott. And you know, thanks to the entire team for keeping, most importantly, people safe, and then for protecting our parkland. Very difficult work. Anybody have any questions or comments? Director Quintero?
Thank you, Scott, for that report. That was excellent. And I just want to acknowledge that during these emergencies, state parks is a part of the statewide coordination in delivering emergency support services. And a number of park rangers coordinated with local law enforcement agencies and others to help evacuate communities during these fires. So along with doing the work in parks, they also are working with our neighbors and our partner agencies, and really want to commend the work done by the field staff. And it's not always just the rangers. There's a lot of park staff that help with supporting the public and the communities of which they are a part. And something that really was significant, in as Scott showed you the boundaries around the fires that Cal Fire and Cal OES put together, and that is that in previous years, the public safety organizations have had to go in and rescue people who stayed behind and didn't evacuate. But because of the way the evacuations were handled this year, there were virtually no deaths in terms of the public. And really, it's an interesting phase to be in that the experience of these disasters is teaching us how to manage them better. And the level of coordination that you're seeing was well reflected by Scott's presentation. And it is really something to watch this in real time as decisions are being made, as resources are being gathered and directed and redirected. And it's something that I think we can all be very proud of. So I just want to acknowledge the very good work that the collective teams and parks are doing. As Scott said, you know, the resources management teams just got right in there, and he's exactly right. There have been a few times and I said, you know, can we do this? And within, it feels like minutes, but probably within an hour or so, we've got the exact picture that we asked for in ways that we've not been able to use before or experience before. So again, Scott, thanks so much to you and your team. And I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. A few commissioner comments or questions. Commissioner Mahdi.
Thanks, Commissioner Ginsburg. And thank you, Scott, for that presentation. And if I apologize if I missed it, but I'm curious. So I recently was driving through Big Sur 2 weeks ago, and you know, the national forests have been closed, and so Big Sur was also closed. And one thing I recognize is I would like make little stops along the way. It's just like how arid the air was. And I'm curious if you all have thought about like using this system that you have right now, if there are ways to begin GIS layers to do more preventative work around, you know, like how we've thought about closed down national forests during the summer, during probably a potential for high fire danger. So like if there's a thought about using this as a tool to do that.
Excellent question. Certainly a lot of those conversations are taking place right now as far as, you know, different tools for evaluating fire danger for closures. And I think we're really just, you know, it's really just been the last 2 years that you've seen entire national forests close. And it was, I want to say, less about fire danger and more about the fact that they were at this elevated level of prepared, what they call their National Wildfire Preparedness Level 5, where all of their resources were committed to fire incidents and they just couldn't staff the forest or respond to any other emergencies at that point. But certainly fire danger obviously plays into that decision making going forward. And I think there are opportunities there. And I think there's conversations just beginning to go on now about how that's looked at. You also haven't seen over time, even the Forest Service, who will sort of be the gatekeeper, if you will, of fire danger and when they begin to restrict campfires, for instance, or campfire permits in their backcountry areas. They have always been resistant to restricting campfires in developed areas and developed fire rings because that's not generally regarded as a significant ignition source because it's a developed and managed spot. But you're starting to see those conversations take place as well too, where that's restricted even in some developed campgrounds now as well. So yes, I think is the short answer to your question that certainly is being looked at.
Commissioner Toy.
Thank you. And thanks, Scott, for that report. And, you know, fires are certainly on all of our minds. And it's kind of amazing to see, like you said, as much as it's been around forever, it's certainly been a heightened concern over these last many years. But I guess I wonder, similar to Commissioner Mahdi, with all of this new technology, which is helping you to make these decisions as the fire events are happening now and make better decisions in more the immediate and short term, how is State Parks looking at this data in the long term? And how is this changing or influencing the ways in which State Parks is making plans for future parks or is changing the way in which parks get designated or the way in which, you know, people might use these parks? Is that changing sort of overall systems and considerations that may have been in place for years?
I see the director's hand up.
That is an excellent question, Commissioner Toy and Commissioner Mahdi. And there's a couple of things that connect both of your questions. One of them is, and I would encourage you to take a look at the available historic fire maps from the areas where you live. Because one of the things that is acknowledged is a lot of these fires that we're seeing are actually burning on previous fire footprints. So this isn't something new. It ends up being a matter of condition of geography, vegetation, time of year, wind, and all those factors come together and very similar fires occur in similar zones. And I see Scott nodding his head. But what happens is the conditions that we have today are more extreme. So even though we may see a historic fire map footprint previously, those are much larger. And the Caldor fire was one of those really good examples where it started out, there was a previous fire map for that area, but it grew much larger than any previous fires that had been recorded. So that's one thing. The other thing that's very good news in terms of the legislative support for parks relative to fire and community safety is that the legislature approved 7 forester positions for state parks, and our resources management team is hiring 7 foresters. And the way that Jay Chamberlain is managing that program is each of those foresters is going to be looking at specific vegetative regions, if you will, and developing the plans on how we're approaching our forest treatments. So reduction of fuels, the priorities for how we can protect property and natural resources. And right now, this year, the natural resources team got $15 million. And I know that a third of that is being used to purchase equipment that can be taken to various areas to address priorities of addressing fuel reductions and such. $5 million is for the staffing that it's going to take to go out and do the work. And I believe the other funding is to help hire these new foresters to come in with us. And part of what the new foresters will do, just like what Scott's office does, is those foresters are going to be coordinating with the foresters of the other agencies like CAL FIRE and and other forest managers. And what that means is our foresters are going to be able not only to anticipate, but to make the plans that'll help us be able to address fire emergencies as well as forest resiliency in advance of these fires coming. So, because what happens is in an emergency situation, decisions can be made very quickly. And what we found in parks, for example, is bulldozers may come in and cut a fire line. And if we had done the planning before, we could direct those bulldozers to cut fire lines that are less impactful on the natural resources. And it also can help us address sort of the preventative strategies. I think it may be good at a subsequent commission meeting to have Jay come in and talk about that fire program so that you can get a better picture of how we're addressing that statewide. And I hope I answered your question, Commissioner Toy.
I guess in follow-up to that, does it change at all, you know, in something that Commissioner Barth asked earlier about where we're put, you know, acquisition of new parklands or, you know, creating more access? Does it change the way at all you think about, say, today that you would have thought 20 years ago about where you might put new parks or open new space given, you know, new data or?
Well, I think an immediate opportunity is to participate in the Reimagining Big Basin effort, because it's exactly that sort of thinking that's going to guide, and Sarah is very familiar with this, it's exactly that sort of thinking that's going to guide how we basically plan parks for the future, given what we are learning now. And yes, absolutely, Catherine, it's where do we put facilities? How do we manage those facilities? How do we create them fire safe? And one of the things that has become clear to me as I visited Armstrong Redwoods and even Big Basin is as we go forward, I think that there's a bigger story to tell relative to the visitors coming to parks. I mean, we need to be talking about the intentionality of where we put buildings, how we manage the resources around those buildings, because honestly, the way we have the opportunity to really teach people how to be more fire resilient in our own homes, our own communities. And so many people live in what's now called the wildland urban interface. And in many of those areas, the sources of ignition or the causes of fires actually originate in residences, not in the forests. So we really have an opportunity with parks to deliver a much broader and very important message on how we look at the landscapes around us and how we interact with those landscapes. So Catherine, you're absolutely right. And I think the Reimagining Big Basin is gonna be super exciting to look at how we can think about public lands as they are integrated with public, with neighborhoods and communities, because it all relates. So it's a great question that you asked, Commissioner Toy.
Thank you.
Commissioner Barth.
Just to build on what both Commissioner Toy and Director Quintero just said, you know, I think at Big Basin in particular, one of the things that was so striking and is a testament to the DPR staff is that no people died, even though they had like an hour to evacuate thousands of people. I mean, it was insane. And if you talk to the staff there about what they think might need to be in the future, it's, I don't know that they don't have the vision yet. We haven't begun the public planning process, but they are very mindful and concerned about public safety in a fire context. And I guess I would just encourage DPR. I think you're already heading in this direction, but you just got a nice budget with money for capital improvements and for backlog. You know, as you're dealing with existing parks that have not burned, but likely will, and you're right, Director Quintero, we know what those are. Although I heard from a renowned fire ecologist just earlier this week who said he thinks there's very few places in California that aren't going to burn. So that was a very sobering comment. But regardless, I just would urge DPR and all of us to think about, are there changes to recreation we need to be making now? Not just seasonal that you talked about, Scott, but I think that's smart and wise. But, you know, before we just go back in and invest in updating, say, a campground, is that campground still safe in a fire context? And what do we need to do to make it safe? Because I think there are real concerns about people being out in the backcountry or not even that in the front country and getting stuck in a fire. And those are some of those are things, modifications that can be made, you know, immediately as you're dealing with your maintenance and backlog issues, you know, absent whole new parks or whole new reimagining, which we also need to do. But it's so sobering to see how lucky we are that thousands of people did not die at Big Basin, that I hope as we go forward, all maintenance and upgrades and whatnot are sort of considering that. I'm sure the DPR staff already are, but it's just, it's powerful and sobering.
Go ahead, Director Quintero.
I just meant one thing that I might add to Commissioner Barr's comments, and that is when we toured Big Basin recently, one of the things that was pointed out to us is the worst damage done to the large coastal redwoods, and I can see Sarah nodding her head, was by the buildings that were adjacent to these massive trees. They burned hotter than just the non-built environment in the forest. So there's just a lot of things that we're all learning right now that we absolutely have to apply going forward. And you are absolutely right. And it certainly has all eyes on it. And I think with the various expertise of public safety, natural resources, our planners, all of that together really puts us in a position to really do something very different for the future. And we're in that moment now. So it's just really critical. And thank you for bringing that up, Commissioner Barth.
And it seems like that this will be a little bit of a theme for our meeting as we grapple with these issues in real time tomorrow when we're considering the Auburn State Recreation Area plan. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more about the department's thinking and mitigation strategies and that careful balance between public safety and providing access to the wonderful natural and recreational opportunities that the department spaces hold. So with that, and without seeing any other commissioner comments, why don't we move to public comment on the budget report, legislation update, and park operations update. This is a reminder that it's public comment on those reports and not on the Auburn State Recreation Area General Plan. That will be tomorrow. But if you wish to speak on these three topics, please raise your hand in Zoom or dial *9 on your telephone, and staff will call your name when it is your turn to speak. And I believe we are offering 1 minute per public comment.
Commission Chair, it appears we have one person currently with the raised hand to speak. Participants, when I will unmute your microphone. If you have decided not to comment, please say pass. And I apologize in advance if I mispronounce your name. You'll have 1 minute to speak. Mike Garabedian, please unmute yourself or please begin your 1 minute of comment.
Thank you. Mike Garabedian with Friends of the North Fork, American River Group. I want to start address items 4 and 6 and start with an anecdote that is not a comment on the ASRA, but just to point out that at the last general plan meeting, there was an individual at that part of the plan that has the OHV area in it. And he knew very little about that part of the plan or about the OHV area. Now, our comment is, pretty simply, that districts, parks, recreation areas, and so on need to not feel dependent on OHV funding, need to know that they're free in their decision-making with regard to OHV funding. And we're not saying that this has happened or that we're aware that it's happened at all, but at least we want to do everything possible to avoid the appearance of that. A further inquiry is when an OHV area is inside a park or inside a recreation area, but also if it's adjacent or like the SRA, also if it's adjacent like Hands of Borrego, how is that funding handled? I really appreciate this opportunity to speak about this morning. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for the comments, Mike. And for the tech team, for those who are watching on Zoom, it's hard for people, at least it's hard for me to see how much time people have, the way the screen is formatted. If anybody can mess with that a little bit, that'd be great. Are there any other public comment?
It appears that all public comments have been heard.
Okay, well, we are flying along then. I now call to close the public comment period for agenda items 4 through 6. Are there any questions and or comments, additional comments from the commissioners on these items? Okay, seeing none. So what I would propose now is that we take a 15-minute break. Let people, maybe even a 20-minute break, and let folks grab a snack or a cup of coffee or stretch their legs. And then we will come back for the remaining items and try to move through them without taking a lunch break, because I think we can get through them relatively quickly, or at least so it seems. And if we need another break, we can certainly take one. But why don't I suggest a 20-minute break now? And so we'll come back at 10:50. Does that work for everybody? Okay, great. We'll see everyone at 10:50.
Vice Chair Ginsburg, we are recording and broadcasting.
Great. Welcome back, everybody. During the break, I was, for one, was able to figure out a Zoom background. So where we are now on the agenda is item 7, which is commission business. Item 7A is the commission meeting schedule for 2022. Regarding the 2022 meeting calendar, this is a reminder for commissioners to think about recommendations to staff as they plan the schedule for commission meetings for 2022. If there are any considerations for dates, dates that won't work absolutely, that you know already won't work for you, please let staff know. Hopefully, we're all going to be able to have the opportunity to meet in person again. So if there are ideas for meetings or activities or field trips, those would also be welcome. I don't think this is an action item. Does anybody have any comments or thoughts on that before we move on to item 7B?
Question. Do the commissioners have an opportunity to meet and confer ourselves? Can we have an informal meeting, I guess, is based on the Brown Act, which I assume we're subject to. No more than 3 of us can meet at a time.
I think we have our clerk or our counsel could answer that. To my understanding, there are some exceptions to the Brown Act for purely social activities where business isn't discussed. But other than that, meetings do need to be agendized and publicly noticed. Do we have anyone who wants to comment on that?
Commissioner Ginsburg, I'd be happy to comment.
Thanks, Sarah.
First off, I just want to make a small clarification. The Brown Act applies to local agencies.
You're right. Sorry.
This commission, no problem. They're almost interchangeable. This commission is the Begley-Keene Open Meeting Act.
Yes.
And yes, when a majority of commission members meet, so for this commission, there's 7. So when 4 or more meet, that is a meeting, that needs to be publicly noticed. However, Commissioner Ginsburg is right. If there's informal, parties, similar events, as long as no subject matters that would be under the jurisdiction of this commission is discussed, those informal gatherings can take place. And then, you know, as long as it's when we say less than a majority can meet, that's if the chair has not created another state body like a subcommittee. So that's why we always say subcommittees need to be two or less, because that does not trigger Bagley-Keene. But if a subcommittee was three or more, then it would trigger Bagley-Keene. So in short, if I could just summarize, two or more is always okay. If there's no subject matter subcommittee on it, three could get together and it would not trigger a meeting. Four or more would trigger a meeting unless it's an informal party gathering.
Thank you, Tara. And I think you meant two or less, not two or more.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But if three of us...
did that help?
No, because if three of us got together just to kind of talk about general strategy on the commission, ways that we could, you know, improve the commission, have greater impact in helping Armando, is that a problem?
That's only allowable if those three are not part of a subcommittee that's created by the chair.
Right, right. Yeah, this would be clearly something that would just be initiated by a commissioner or two commissioners that wanted to discuss something that would be relevant to Rec and Parks.
Correct. As long as those three aren't created by a formal action of the chair, that's correct.
By a no, I don't mean a subcommittee. It would be formal if it was a subcommittee. But if I just called up Commissioner Ginsburg and somebody else, is that okay?
So it is okay because it's not a formal action, a formal body created by the chair.
Got it. Okay. That's all I need to know.
And it's less than a majority. So yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Tara, it's possible that the other option to address Commissioner Bakewell's desire that I sense is that we, you know, learn how to work together and all that sort of thing would be some type of retreat, which could be agendized, but more strategic and involve perhaps some learning opportunities and training. So, you know, that's also something, you know, we could possibly discuss and maybe should raise with Chair Mapp when she's back.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay, so moving on to agenda item 7B, which is commission elections for 2022. Because we're nearing the end of the year, it becomes time to discuss 2022 commission leadership. Because Chair Mapp isn't here with us, I would move to revisit this action item in the December meeting, if that's okay with everyone.
Good. Great.
And then lastly is agenda item 7C, or at least lastly for this group of items, which is subcommittee review. And that probably does warrant a little bit of discussion. Again, we wouldn't take any action without our chair here, and it's our chair who has responsibility for both creating subcommittees and appointing people to subcommittees. At the last commission hearing, we mentioned the need to review our current subcommittees. Here's what we have currently/historically. There is a general plans committee, which was created in September of 2017, which currently has no members. There is a future role of the commission, speaking to Commissioner Bakewell's point, a future role of commission subcommittee created in September of 17 that currently has one member, and that's Chair Mapp. There's the Golden Bear Award Committee, which I believe is a recognition committee created in September of 2017, which does not have any current members. There is a climate change committee also created in 2017 with one current member on it, and that's Commissioner Wittenberg. Then we have a partnerships and diversity to expand park access committee, created in October of 17 and updated in January of 19, that has officially one member chair map, although I think I expressed an interest in serving on that or supporting that, and there probably everybody wants to serve on that one. So we have that one, but chair map is the only official member, and then something called the Upper Truckee River Project and the Golf Course Consultant Committee. And so it's my observation that these committees were created quite a few years ago and created before many of us were actually appointed to this commission. So I do think that there's some opportunity and perhaps with some guidance from staff in terms of what's useful for the department to sort of rethink or reframe these various committees. And then to just throw this out there, two specific ideas I think were raised already in this meeting. And one would be a naming committee that could work on with the department, its naming policies, and then perhaps have ongoing dialogue about naming opportunities or naming decisions so that there's, you know, some back and forth between the commission and department staff on that one. And then what was also raised in this meeting was either, and I'm not sure what the, you know, right name for it is, future planning or long-term planning committee. And I think that that came up in the context of Commissioner Mahdi and Commissioner Toy's, or no, maybe Commissioner Barth's, some of your comments about acquisitions and, you know, sort of what is the future of our park system. It came up during the public safety report. So I took note of that too. So those are two we may wish to consider. I think what I would ask from staff, are there any committees that you think, you know, might, that really either haven't functioned going back to the time before many of us were appointed or that are no longer relevant? Because we do have officially six committees that were created in 2017. So I don't know how relevant they continue to be. I don't know if anybody has any thoughts on that. Or Commissioner Wittenberg, you are senior commissioner, I believe. So if you are, I don't see you on the call at the moment, but if you are, no. You're not on my, oh, there you are. Weren't on my I only have nine boxes. So Commissioner Wittenberg, if you have any thoughts, that would be really helpful.
Well, just some historical perspective is what I have. So these these subcommittees were things that the committee members themselves wanted to work on and felt were important and were supported, of course, by staff. But they really don't, supported conceptually by staff, but they really don't go too far, partly because there isn't much staff support of a subcommittee. I mean, that's just not where the department, you know, has funded somebody to actually help us do work on these committees. So they sort of drift. And just generally to go over what we had, the general plan was part of transformation. And it was really, as you saw the last time we adopted a general plan, and I'm sure it'll come up tomorrow, always does. People are upset because the general plans are so top level because they're supposed to last or often do last 40 years. So the department wants it to be broad. So there's an umbrella to work under, and the people who make comments expected to be a more of a project management approach. And so the goal of this committee, which I think was started by Ernest Chung, was to try and think about how general plans should be revised. And this would be with staff and with, so it was sort of the broadest, I think, of our committees. Should we go to project plans instead of a general plan, or a general plan that's very short instead of the 717 pages of the Auburn plan? And that's really what we started talking about. And I still think it's a good idea, but the commission would have to decide if it was useful and we wanted to work on it. The future role of commission, I think, is if you read our, what we did was we read our legislative charge, and it can be interpreted many different ways, depending on how activist a commission wants to be, or again, the department wants input from them. And that's really what that was about at the time. The Golden Bear Awards, we came up with an award we wanted to give, but it, again, I'm not even sure we ever gave a Golden Bear Award. It's just difficult to do this without a staff to do it, really. So I'm not sure if we want to continue that. Climate change most recently has consisted of the Climate Change Committee talking to Jay and then conveying information to the commission and during the report time. And personally, if that's what it's going to be, then I think it should be just a report by Jay every other meeting about the climate change activities of the commission, unless we want to have some impact on that. But otherwise, it should just be a report. You know about the diversity and access. And Upper Truckee River, we were trying to oversee some changes that were being made under the general plan and making sure they were being followed through. And again, the three people doing that are no longer on the commission. And I don't know, perhaps Tara, you could tell us, how, you know, that had to do with the golf course realignment. Is that done? Is it necessary to continue this commission?
No, the department does not believe it is necessary. That, like you said, the purpose of this commission was to help select, the golf course consultant to then give advice on whether or not, you know, all of the holes within the golf course, you know, could be within the current footprint. And resulted in a report, and that report was finalized and delivered to this commission. So that committee's work is done.
Okay. So that's the sort of historical perspective.
Thank you, Commissioner Wittenberg. I have a couple of comments, but before I offer them, I wanted to see if anybody else had any questions or comments.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Commissioner Nakel.
Yes, I would like to recommend that we have a staff diversity and contracting diversity committee. They can be, I'm not giving you the right wording for it, but we do a lot of contracting at the parks and we hire a lot of staff, and I don't see a lot of diversity in terms of the staff. And I don't know of anything that we're working on. I don't know what procedure we have for making sure that we're contracting, or at least opening up the contracting process to, you know, minorities, people of color, and women. And I'd like us to be able to talk about that.
Okay, great. Before I return to staff here, let me grab a couple of other commissioner comments. Commissioner Mahdi.
Well, I second what Commissioner Bagwell said. And I also, I think Commissioner Wittenberg providing that context was really helpful. And I'm curious in your experience of these subcommittees, one of my concerns is, you know, having like what that staff and commissioner interaction looks like, and what I'm hearing from what you shared, that there wasn't much support there. And so I'm struggling a little to conceptualize how that translates into how we're making a difference as a commission and what our interaction with the staff is. And so if we do create subcommittees, I just want to make sure that they're meaningful and that we are, you know, we're engaging with staff or engaging with the public in ways that are meaningful, and that we are trying to like push for change or at least like, you know, support DPR in a way that really helps them in the work that they're doing.
Thank you.
Good comment.
Commissioner Toy.
Yeah, ditto what Commissioner Mahdi said there. You know, and I think
the majority of us are within 2 years of serving on this commission, really meeting only under COVID. And so I think, you know, what one of the things you said, Vice Chair Ginsburg, earlier was, you know, is there a way for us to have some kind of strategic retreat or something like that? Because I feel like what we're missing is really knowing how, as a body, we can be of greatest service in our roles as commissioners, to parks and to California. So, you know, what is it that we could, and I'd rather have us pick fewer things that we're actually going to act more meaningful on and provide more purpose and direction in our role as commissioners than for us to establish a number of subcommittees that might not be the best use of our time in terms of what we can actually accomplish. And what is, you know, the last thing we want to do is make work for staff. I think all of us have been on that end as staff members of other organizations. So, you know, how are we in fact most helpful and meaningful, and what strategically is our role in order to provide the best guidance? And I think without us having had that overall strategic conversation first, we're perhaps heading down a road that doesn't actually get us, you know, somewhere useful to parks and our own discussions.
Thank you for that. Alex, you had a staff comment?
I did. I just wanted to, because you guys were talking about these subcommittees, I did want to remind you that some of these committees were established in 17 and 18. And keep in mind that in 2019 and 2020, we did not have a quorum. So we didn't actually meet very often at all in those years. And so, of course, there wasn't much activity that happened. So it might not necessarily be that the committees aren't as useful as the fact that we did not actually have a commission to, you know, enact on some of those committees.
Thank you. I mean, it sounds like, and I think Commissioner Wittenberg, thank you for sharing which ones that you think may not be as vibrant or relevant. I think there are a couple of things. I mean, I definitely heard some strong desire for us to have more sort of engagement with the department on naming issues, diversity, equity, and inclusion issues, which is what Commissioner Bakewell was alluding to, that had some support from other commissioners. Again, this idea of being involved in some sort of more strategic visioning or long-term planning for the system, that seems like an appropriate commissioner role. But it sounds to me that these are things that we would want to talk about at some kind of retreat. You know, if Director Quintero, you know, if we felt, or Alex or Stacy, if we felt like that was something that we could all do, whether it's, you know, in Sacramento, or if we had to do it virtually, I guess we could. And I'm sure that there's probably some training and a little bit more education that we would all benefit from, because we are a relatively, as a whole, you know, Commissioner Wittenberg's been doing this for a long time, and Commissioner Mapp's been doing this for a long time. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the rest of us are relatively inexperienced. And we do want to be helpful, and we don't want to create mate work. And then to that end, I would say something for the department to think about is, I join some of my colleagues who noted, I don't really see how a subcommittee structure works that isn't staffed. It's just not, I mean, we as you know, we can always pick up the phone with one or two of our commissioners and talk about anything. But if it's not sort of staffed and structured and agendized, then there's no product. So then it does become a little bit of maybe a, you know, a bit of a you know, or a waste of time, or you know, an exercise that just doesn't bear fruit, right? You know, and so maybe that's something for us all to think about, given resources and resources constraints, whether there, you know, there could be any staff resources available to support a committee structure. And I would also agree with, I'm not sure if it was Commissioner Barth or Toy who noted that fewer is probably, and more substantive is probably better than, you know, more committees and less substantive. But perhaps this is the kind of thing that, you know, maybe we ought to be grappling with, at a retreat of some sort, even if it were a half day. Yes, Commissioner Bakewell.
Commissioner Ginsburg, let me try to be very, very direct. I think the commission needs a staff. Whether it's for subcommittee work or whatever, but whatever it is that we are bringing forward, somebody needs to be accountable to the commission to feather out and to look into things that we're concerned about so they can get back. If you heard, there was sort of a general undercurrent that we initiate things and, people kind of lose interest in them, or, we're so disjointed. This is just my perspective. Maybe I'm just Johnny come lately, but we just don't have a cohesive focus on how to get our input implemented, or at least looked into, to see if these things can make a difference. And, we should have a greater interest and a greater impact on driving the staff. I don't think the staff should just be driving us. That's just the way I feel.
Thank you for that comment. Well, maybe I could make a suggestion, because I'm not that comfortable moving too far afield here without our chair. Anyway,
I'm not suggesting.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to suggest is, if this is okay with everyone, if we brief, maybe Director Quintero, you and I could brief Chair Mapp and talk about with some of the thoughts and some of the comments, and whether it's Stacey or Alex, who I think, and Stacey, Alex, and Tara seem to work most closely, at least the commission meetings that I've attended seem to be to work most closely with the commission. Maybe there's a way we could revisit this in December, not to just do this again, but we obviously have the questions that would come up that we would try to kind of report out on would be whether there is some staff capacity for how we would structure some staff capacity for the commission and or any committees that the commission felt like were important. And before deciding on what those committees are, maybe there could be some sort of retreat among, we now have a full complement of commissioners, which is terrific. And that took a long time. And there was some transition between, directors. So, and then COVID. So there's a lot of reasons that things kind of stalled. And it seems to me that there would be, at the very least online, better in person, if we had a half day or a few hour meeting amongst us where we could talk about, what we all want to get out of this commission and how we can help the department and our state park system. And then, and that would include a discussion about, identifying what committees we want to move forward with, whether there could be staff, et cetera.
Just to put this in context, I find Armando is extremely responsive, but this man has a broad, enormous task, and he doesn't have time to return our calls. There's seven of us. If we all just called him once, seven times for him to get on the phone based on everything else that he has that he's doing, I mean, it's too enormous. I mean, I really think, and we'll discuss it more, that we need to have a staff or a few staff people assigned, or just a commission staff. I don't know how many people that is, one, two, whatever the case may be. And the last thing, every time I talk to Armando, he is driving somewhere. He needs a driver. it's the man has got to be, I don't know how he has time to think.
Well, anyway. Commissioner Bakewell, maybe one of us could drive him, because that would take care of a few things. We could get our questions answered.
I don't drive myself, so I got to drive.
Actually, my car assists me in my driving. Thank you. That's pretty funny. What I think would be good is for us to get a small contingent, as you suggested, Vice Chair Ginsburg, and go over what our past experiences have been, because I think there's various examples that we can bring forward of what Parks has done, and figure out a way that could work to address what you're bringing up. Because obviously, it's in all of our interest to have a really effective commission and a really effective Department of Parks and Recreation. And so I am happy to basically go over what we think has worked and what hasn't, from, you know, certainly commissioner's perspective and from park staff. And I think it makes sense to figure this out. And I just got a text from somebody who said, hey, I'll volunteer to be your driver. but actually my car can drive me. So it's, we're okay there. But I do really think this is an important discussion, and let's get a small core together with commissioners and Liz and I, and perhaps Alex, and see what might make sense here and come back to the commission before December, maybe even before December, with a couple of approaches.
I think that would be great. And then we could, so that we are, cause we did start to talk about this in September. So if we could do some work between this meeting and the December meeting, and then sort of report out and get feedback from commissioners and sort of chart a path forward, that would be great. And I do want to jump into Commissioner Toy's comments. The goal here, at least from my perspective, is not to make work, right? I mean, I think that's really important. We want to sort of help offer guidance based on our own lenses and our own experience and our own subject matter issues that we're passionate about. But we want to try to support the department and not create work or create resource constraints for the department. So there is a careful balance there.
And I do think it's important to acknowledge that everybody on the screen is very busy. And so Commissioner Bakewell has said that every time we talk, we're both doing something. And I know that there have been, other commissioners on the screen who I've tried to reach, and it takes a while for us to connect. So that's one of the complications that we also face, is we've got, and as is always the case with groups like this, you've got really good, very busy people who are all trying to coordinate. So the schedule challenge is there, but I think we can certainly talk about something that'll make this better. So thank you for bringing this up.
Sure. All right. Well, with that said, I think we can move on to agenda item 8, and there will be public comment after agenda item 8, because items 7 and 8 are related. And these are actual, to our point, and I think this one will go relatively quickly, commissioner reports and from each subcommittee. And so I'm going to assume that there is no commissioner report on the general plan subcommittee because it has no current members. Would any commissioner like to offer anything on that topic? Seeing none, the future role of commission subcommittee, where the only member right now is Chair Matt. Would anybody like to offer anything else on that one?
Well, I would. Go ahead. Wrong hand, but I would like to see that as a topic continue. If the department wants it, because this was really part of transition. And one of the things we have to decide in all of these committees is whether we feel we have something to contribute and whether the department feels we have something to contribute and how that works out. And maybe the staff is part of a different staff is part of each committee. Who's subject expert, anything like that. So as a topic, I think it would be valuable as a committee.
As an ongoing committee, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you, Commissioner Wittenberg. The Golden Bear Award Subcommittee has no current members, so I assume that there's no report out on that one, unless commissioners or staff on the call want to offer anything. Okay, seeing none. Climate Change Subcommittee, Commissioner Wittenberg.
No report.
Thank you. Partnerships and Diversity to Expand Park Access Subcommittee. Chair Mapp isn't here. Obviously, we're all excited about the equity and access initiatives that have that the governor has led and is that Director Quintero strongly supports and that we're working on. I don't know, Director Quintero, if you have anything you want to offer on park access at the moment.
Well, certainly the access programs that we've got approved by the legislature and funded by the legislature are a big step in that regard. But one of the things that's just is about to come out is our strategic plan draft, which is going to come to each of you, and you will see that the statements around diversity and access and equity and inclusion are all very clear. And I also want to make sure that the commissioners understand that when it comes to letting contracts and inviting contracts and RFPs, we have standards that we have to meet from our contracting office to make sure that we are reaching out to business owners and contractors who are ethnic minorities and women. And we can get you information on that, because I do think that, you know, that is one of those things that we have to be comfortable in understanding that it is being addressed. We are also working with a consultant right now to develop the department's equity and diversity plan. It was something that was supposed to have been done a few years ago, and we are working on that now, and we will be bringing that to you when it's ready for your review, but we're just getting started on that.
Great, thank you. Upper Truckee River project, I'm gonna assume no report out unless staff has any sort of update on that one. All right, so we'll now hear public comments regarding the commission reports and subcommittees. If you wish to speak on this topic, please raise your hand in Zoom or dial *9 on your telephone, and staff will call your name when it is your turn to speak. Do we have any public comment on this?
Do have two hands raised for public comment. I will call a name. You'll then begin your minute. I call your name and you choose not to speak, please say pass. And I apologize in advance if I mispronounce your name. Mike Garabedian, please unmute your microphone and begin your 1 minute of comment.
Thank you, Commission. Mike Garabedian, Friends of the North Fork. Well, the idea of a general plan review committee sounded, I say in the past tense, like a very good idea. For instance, if there are a lot of major plan issues, or a major user survey was just ignored and the plan went in a different direction, or major interagency issues with county projects in the park, or regional water board allowing major pollution of the park, federal funding issues, or between different divisions. But obviously, referring a plan to a committee that doesn't exist is not going to work. So look forward to the board's consideration of what to do about the commissions. Thank you.
Thank you. John Given, please unmute your microphone and begin your 1 minute of public comment.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. John Given on behalf of LA Parks Alliance. Thank you all for the work you do and the opportunity to speak with you today. As you know, the private LA ART aerial tram project has been proposed to connect Union Station and Dodger Stadium running across LA State Historic Park in Los Angeles. The alignment over the center of the park has been publicly abandoned, but the remaining Broadway alignment still runs across the park and will have significant impacts. Under the Public Resources Code, the Commission has jurisdiction over the general plan amendment that will be required. Two non-disclosure agreements, one between the project proponents and LA Metro, the lead agency for the project's environmental review, and one between the proponents and state parks, seem to have greatly limited the information available to the public. And because of that, the environmental process has been flawed so far. The notice of preparation was deficient, scoping opportunities were inadequate, and misinformation about the project has abounded. Your commission must ensure that State Parks follows the highest standards of transparency as this project proceeds. Thank you so much.
Thank you. As a reminder, this public comment period is regarding the subcommittees, the commission subcommittees. We will be moving into public comment for items not on the agenda. It looks like we have no more hands raised, Commissioner.
Okay, great. So I now call to close the public comment period for agenda item 8. Thank you to those who gave public comment. Any final questions or comments from the commissioners on agenda items 7 or 8? Commissioner Wittenberg.
I just would like to suggest that the LA State Historic Park would be a good destination and place for the commission to meet to look at this issue that was just raised in person and also visit the Angeles District. So when we were talking about places to go, I wanted to offer that.
Great. Okay, moving on to agenda item 9A, consent items and memorial grove resolutions. Agenda item 9 is the consent items, just one on the agenda, which is item 9A, memorial grove resolutions. And I believe that Commissioner Toy is going to read the resolutions, and then we will need a motion presented by either Commissioner Toy or another commissioner to move them. But why don't we start with Commissioner Toy reading the resolutions.
And I'm going to recuse myself from this.
Oh, that's right. Commissioner Barth, thank you very much. You are recused. Or do we need a motion? Tara, do we need a motion to recuse a commissioner on an item?
No, we don't need a motion. Commissioner Barth simply states that she's going to recuse herself, and then she'll exit, or, you know, at least turn off the meeting from her end. And then when this item is over, Stacy will let her know she can join back into the meeting.
Okay, so great. I should turn my video off.
Yeah.
Well as my sound. Okay.
Thank you.
Great, then I'm gonna go ahead and read the resolutions, and then here we go. So resolution, the August Family Grove, Jerry, Barbara, Lonnie, and Lee, resolution 10-2021, adopted the 29th day of September, 2021. Whereas Save the Redwoods League has requested that the California State Park and Recreation Commission approve the establishment of the following commemorative Redwood Grove in Prairie Creek Redwood State Park. And whereas this grove shall henceforth be known as the August Family Grove, Jerry, Barbara, Lonnie, and Lee, and whereas the establishment of this grove has been made possible through the most generous donation of Barbara August, now, therefore, be it resolved that the California State Park and Recreation Commission extend its most sincere gratitude to this donor and hereby approves the establishment of this commemorative Redwood Grove. The next one, the Karen Carr Family Grove, Resolution 11-2021, adopted the 29th day of September, 2021. Whereas Save the Redwoods League has requested that the California State Park and Recreation Commission approve the establishment of the following commemorative Redwood Grove in Jedediah State Redwood State Park, and whereas the grove shall henceforth be known as the Karen Carr Family Grove, and whereas the establishment of this grove has been made possible through the most generous donation of Suzanne Colwell, now therefore be it resolved that the California State Park and Recreation Commission extends its most sincere gratitude to the donor and hereby approves the establishment of this commemorative Redwood Grove. Cantus Grove, Susan and Jerry Jewell, Resolution 9-2021, to be adopted the 29th day of September, 2021. Whereas the Save the Redwoods League has requested that the California State Park and Recreation Commission approve the establishment of the following commemorative Redwood Grove in Navarro River Redwood State Park, and whereas the grove shall henceforth be known as the Cantus Grove. Oh my goodness, I just had my computer shut down that I was reading from. So I don't know if anybody else has those up. Otherwise, it's going to take me a minute to get those back up.
I suppose I can try to find them if you give me a minute.
Maybe I can ask a question in between. What is the contribution that these people are making that gets them a grove?
I'll let staff answer that question.
There are various. I would have to look into each one to see, but there are different levels of contributions that can be made.
Do you have any of them before you so you could tell us?
Let me look into the record and see if I have it for these specific ones.
Yes. Okay, and I've got the record back up now. I can.
Great.
Okay.
Sorry for that.
I would add that in the past, we were told it was about $25,000. So that may have gone up or be varied, but that was our understanding previously on the commission.
Okay. So I'm going to start again with the Cantus Grove, Susan and Jerry Jewell, Resolution 9-2021. Adopted the 29th day of September 2021. Whereas the Save the Redwoods League has requested that the California State Park and Recreation Commission approve the establishment of the following commemorative Redwood Grove in the Navarro River Redwood State Park, and whereas the grove shall henceforth be known as the Cantus Grove, Susan and Jerry Jewell, and whereas the establishment of this grove has been made possible through the most generous donation of Susan Jewell, now therefore be it resolved that the California State Park and Recreation Commission extends its most sincere gratitude to the donor and hereby approves of the establishment of this commemorative Redwood Grove. Linda's Grove, Resolution 12-2021, to be adopted the 29th day of September 2021. Whereas the Save the Redwoods League has requested that the California State Park and Recreation Commission approve the establishment of the following commemorative Redwood Grove in Wilder Ranch State Park, and whereas the grove shall henceforth be known as Linda's Grove, and whereas the establishment of this grove has been made possible through the most generous donation of Tyler Nelson, now, therefore, be it resolved that the California State Park and Recreation Commission extends its most sincere gratitude to this donor and hereby approves the establishment of this commemorative Redwood Grove. The Scarlet Family Grove, Resolution Number 13-2021, to be adopted the 29th day of September 2021. Whereas Save the Redwoods League has requested that the California State Park and Recreation Commission approve the establishment of the following commemorative Redwood Grove in Portola Redwood State Park, and whereas this grove shall henceforth be known as the Scarlet Family Grove, and whereas the establishment of this grove has been made possible through the most generous donation of Robert Scarlet, now therefore be it resolved that the California State Park and Recreation Commission extend its most sincere gratitude to this donor and hereby approves the establishment of this commemorative Redwood Grove. The Ranger Gerald Jerry E. Wagoner Memorial Grove, Resolution Number 14-2021, adopted the 29th day of September 2021, whereas Save the Redwoods League has requested that the California State Park and Recreation Commission approve the establishment of the following commemorative Redwood Grove in the Forest of Nisene Mark State Park, and whereas this grove shall henceforth be known as the Ranger Gerald Jerry E. Wagoner Memorial Grove, and whereas the establishment of this grove has been made possible through the most generous donation of Elaine Wedgartner, now therefore be it resolved that the California State Park and Recreation Commission extends its most sincere gratitude to this donor and hereby approves the establishment of this commemorative memorial grove. And that completes the presentation of reading into the record of six of these resolutions. I move that the commission approve these six resolutions.
Is there a second? Can I get a second from one of our commissioners?
I'll second.
Thank you, Commissioner Wittenberg. Clerk, can the clerk please take a roll call vote?
Yes. Commissioner Bakewell?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginsburg?
Yes.
Commissioner Motti?
Yes.
Commissioner Toy?
Yes.
And Commissioner Wittenberg?
Yes.
Okay, that's the vote for all present.
Great. Motion carries. All right. We are now on to agenda item 10. We'll now hear public comments for items not on the agenda for either today or tomorrow. As a reminder, public comment for items on the agenda for tomorrow will be heard during the public comment period following the scheduled staff presentations on Thursday. So at this time, I'd like to ask members of the public who wish to make comments for items not on the agenda to please use the raise hand option in Zoom or to dial *9 participating by telephone. Staff will call your name when it is your turn to speak.
Commission Vice Chair, it looks like we have about six people with raised hands to speak. Participants, when it is your turn to speak, I will inform you, call your name, ask you to unmute your microphone, and then you begin your 1 minute of comment. If you have decided not to comment, please say pass. I apologize in advance if I mispronounce your name. Laura Velke, please raise unmute your microphone and begin your 1 minute of public comment.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Laura Velke, and I'm speaking on behalf of the LA Parks Alliance, a coalition of community leaders, environmentalists, transportation leaders, and public space advocates. I recently submitted a letter to you on behalf of the Alliance, and I hope everyone has had an opportunity to read that letter. There were a number of people interested in making public, general public comment today that were unable to do so because of the commission's policy to place general public comment at the end of the meeting and not at a set time. The commission should consider changing its policy to allow a non-agendized public comment at the start of the meeting so regular folks can participate without having to wait 4 to 8 hours. I'm here to point attention to the lack of transparency surrounding state parks' participation in the LA Art Gondola Project's questionable NDA agreement. State Parks Chief Counsel held up a public records request for the NDA for 9 months and continues to support this highly non-transparent arrangement. In the case of this project, the NDA appears to have no purpose here other than shelter information from the public. The NDA creates a condition in which park staff feels they cannot speak about the project at all. As the oversight body of state parks, I would encourage the commission to try and persuade Chief Counsel up the NDA so that staff can repair the public's trust. Thank you for your time.
Rachel Norton, please unmute your microphone and begin your 1 minute of public comment.
Okay, good morning, commissioners. This is Rachel Norton. I'm the executive director of California State Parks Foundation. I just wanted to this morning thank Director Quintero and Vice Chair Ginsburg for joining the foundation at our celebration at Yosemite Slough 2 weeks ago. California State Parks Foundation has been working in partnership with the department on this program for the past 15 years at least, and the latest phase of this project has completed the entrance, native plantings, and some necessary infrastructure for an eventual visitor center and other amenities, and we remain very grateful for your partnership. I also want to congratulate the department on the launch of the fourth grade adventure pass today. We were extremely proud to work with you and with the First Partners Office to get this pilot initiative funded. And we really look forward to working with you to gather information and data. I really appreciated the discussion earlier today and hopefully to extend this program to all parks in the future. Thank you.
Yuval Barzimer, please unmute your microphone and begin your 1 minute of public comment.
Good afternoon or good morning, commissioners. My name is Yuval Barzimer, and I'm speaking on behalf of LA Park Alliance about the proposed gondola project that is proposed by LA Art, which is owned by Frank McCourt, the owner of the parking lots that serve the Dodger Stadium. I'm a real estate professional for the past 35 years, with most of it spent in downtown Los Angeles. I was both surprised and alarmed to find out that State Park staff has been collaborating with the applicant, and this is according to LA Art, the project proponent, on the idea that the gondola can go over the park as if it's a done deal. Negotiation about improving the entrance to the park, a concession stand, seemed to take place behind closed doors, as apparently the department signed an NDA and cannot share this information with the public. While the real discussion of the cost of the real estate, approximately 60,000 square feet of prime park space, will be taken away forever and will impacting the quality of the rest of the park. Is there any discussion about the value of land that will be given to Frank McCourt, a real estate developer? Are you concerned about it? Thank you very much for your time.
Richard Rojas, please unmute your microphone and begin your 1 minute of public comment.
Good morning, commissioners, park staff, and Director Gandetto. I would like to share just a little bit about the LA Arts project that I believe will, if left unchanged, will deeply negatively impact the visitor experience, the historic view shed, and the trust that has built over 20 years of the community around LA State Historic Park. Well, I have a lot of information I'd like to share now that I've heard that Commissioner Wittenberg would like to come to Los Angeles as a group. I'm really going to hold back on what I want to share this morning. But for all you Major League Baseball fans in the group, you know that the Major League only asks the Dodgers to have 81 game home games a year. So my question is, what's going to happen with that tram project for the rest of the 284 days? And many of you know the history of LA and know the history of Chavez Ravine, how the O'Malley family was able to get that land at penny on the dollar to create Dodger Stadium. So I would encourage the group to come and visit us and prevent that from happening. Thank you.
Eric Fraser, please unmute your microphone and begin your 1 minute of public comment.
Yes, thank you. This is Eric Fraser. And let me just take a millisecond to get over how offensive it is to only get a minute to speak. I don't see where that's really a commitment to public, involvement in the commission. Just the same, commissioners, good afternoon, and I appreciate your service, even if you don't appreciate ours. The reason I rise to speak today is because the city of Santa Rosa is about to undertake an urgency ordinance restricting short-term rentals, STRs. If anybody knows anything about visitor-serving areas and the need for affordable lodging, I would imagine it would be this commission, or perhaps maybe the Coastal Commission is a little bit more on the ball. Certainly, everybody should be aware recently of a lawsuit, Kraken versus the city of Santa Barbara, that supports the concept of visitor rights when it comes to affordable lodging. Obviously, I don't get a lot of time to talk about this, but this is an important issue to be able to preserve the right for all Californians to use California State Parks. Thank you very much.
David Carl, please raise your hand for your unmute your microphone and begin your 1 minute of public comment.
1 minute.
Woo-woo! I think am I in? Yeah, there we are. My name is David Carl. I'm the president of the California State Park Rangers Association, known as CSPRA. And we have affiliated with this LA Parks Alliance of organizations that are concerned about the proposed aerial tramway and its impacts on the Los Angeles State Historic Park. An amended general plan may eventually be brought before you, the commission, as the aerial tramway as proposed will certainly impact the park. The Parks Commission in 2005 approved the general plan that applied stringent protections that are spelled out in the Public Resources Code for State Historic Park classifications. The code also states that prior to the development of any new facilities, in any previously classified unit, the department shall revise any existing plan for the unit. The loss of even a few acres of open space in a 32-acre unit to facilities not related to the park's historic mission becomes very significant. Thank you very much.
Vice Chair, that is the end of public comment.
Great, thank you. So I now call to close the public comment period for agenda item 10. I want to thank everybody for their comments. Tara, would you mind just, there was a comment that alluded to this NDA that associated with LA Historic State Park. Can you shed some light on that for us?
Sure. So first off, I'd like to say that it's not an NDA. NDA is, you know, a non-disclosure agreement. This document's title is a document review agreement, and essentially that agreement does not eclipse State Park's duties under the California Environmental Quality Act to review the project that comes to it. You know, in the event the project, you know, is proposed and that it requires to come before this commission, the document review agreement does not eclipse any of those responsibilities. And the agreement also does not eclipse any of the state parks responsibilities under the Public Records Act. So what this document review agreement essentially does is it, because state parks, you know, may be receiving documents, which the proponent of the project may believe is proprietary,
And in that event of State Parks receiving a Public Records Act request, we would collaborate with, you know, the proponents of the project just to see, you know, if those documents are indeed proprietary. It is still within State Parks' discretion, and it must follow the Public Records Act in releasing public documents that are not otherwise exempt. So again, it's just a document review agreement, and it does not in any way affect State Parks' responsibilities under the Public Record Act, CEQA, or the Public Resources Code regarding general plans and amendments from this commission.
Got it. Any other commissioners have any questions or comments? Okay, well, it's 11:50, and that brings us to the end of today's agenda. The meeting will resume tomorrow, Thursday, September 30th at 9 a.m. So I wanted to thank everyone for their participation, and thank staff for all of the work going into today's meeting, and certainly thank my colleagues on the commission, and we'll see everyone tomorrow.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.